O personality of religion, I was greatly overburdened by the undue military phalanxes arranged by atheistic kings, and I was relieved by the grace of the personality of Godhead. Similarly, you were also in a distressed condition, weakened in your standing strength, and thus he also incarnated by his internal energy in the family of the Yadus to relieve you. Purport by his divine grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. The Asuras want to enjoy a life of sense gratification, even at the cost of others' happiness. In order to fulfill this ambition, the Asuras, especially atheistic kings or state executive heads, try to equip themselves with all kinds of deadly weapons to bring about a war in a peaceful society. They have no ambition other than personal aggrandizement, and this Mother Earth feels overburdened by such undue increases of military strength. By increase of the Asuric population, those who follow the principles of religion become unhappy, especially the devotees or devas. In such a situation, the personality of Godhead incarnates to vanquish the unwanted asuras, and to re-establish the true principles of religion. This was the mission of Lord Sri Krishna, and he fulfilled it. Today we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 16, entitled How Parikshit Received the Age of Kali. Text 34. The earth, in the form of a motherly cow, is speaking herein to the bull, who is the very personification of dharma or religious principles. They are sharing their painful experiences, and especially we find in this dialogue how they are so very much sympathetic of the other's plight. This is the nature of benevolent personalities. Paradukaduki, very deeply concerned with another person's welfare, suffering more to see the unhappiness of another than even if that experience came upon oneself. This is not something that is inconceivable within this world. It is the nature of love. The quality of love is not one of taking for one's own interest. That is kama, or lust. Love is the giving of oneself for the welfare, for the happiness of another. It is sacrifice. It is selfless. To the degree our relationship with another is selfless, It is based on the principle of love. To the degree it is selfish, it is based on the principle of lust or kama. A mother or father, the suffering of a child is often more painful than if they had that same suffering themselves. Sometimes they are willing to take on that suffering themselves to relieve it from another. Yes? That is actual service. Service that comes from the heart is a service of self-sacrifice. Not thinking, what will I get? What will the benefit come for me? There are many service-oriented businesses today. It is a whole industry, service-oriented, to satisfy people, to make them happy, to make them feel stable, secure. But generally the purpose is, according to the proportion of a person's mentality, then in the end I'm going to get paid for it. This is just making this person happy is just the medium for me to make profit. That is not love. Love is spontaneous, without expectation. Mother or father, what do they expect from the child? They suffer when the child suffers, they're happy when the child's happy. And on the spiritual platform, that is the perfect and eternal platform of love. So here we find the cow is suffering. The cow here is representing the Mother Earth. She's suffering terribly in her own physical condition. But her heart is mostly bereaved to see the condition of the bull, whose three of his four legs are crippled due to Kali, who's pulverizing them with a stick. Standing, trembling. And the bull in that condition, he's mostly concerned with the welfare of cow. Yes? That is a principle of real care. And in contrary to this principle, we find the very cause of the pain of both of them. Selfish, greedy, envious people who are exploiting them for their own personal interests. If we historically look at the situation before the coming of the incarnation of Lord Krishna, there were very, very powerful personalities who had deep greed and pride rooted so far into the core of their hearts. What were they willing to do to satisfy their desires? Some of them, they read the scriptures, or let us say they studied the knowledge of the scriptures to understand how to get supernatural powers to conquer others. Then they learned about austerities or tapasya, which means practically torturing one's own body and mind for long durations of life, long durations of time, just to get power. And they did it. Just like we see in the world, if you want to be a good athlete, you have to go through a lot of suffering. It might be fun suffering, but you have to really practice. It just doesn't come. If you want to be a scholar, you have to go through a lot of austerities of studying and studying and studying and giving away so much time that you could be enjoying for that effort. If we want to become prominent in any field, it takes sacrifice. It takes austerity. One of our friends went to South India for a yoga retreat, hatha yoga, where people were training in asanas and so forth. And it was many, many people from America and Europe, very popular place. And these people, he said, they were just doing these asanas and these exercises for sometimes 8 or 10 hours a day just to master the process and get certain degrees so that they could teach others and have, you know, influence in teaching. And some of them, they were practicing so hard for so many years, rigorously, that they had to go to chiropractors because their backs were so seriously damaged. Hare Krishna. That doesn't seem to be the purpose of what they're doing. But they continue on, even through serious pain, just to try to get that high position of expertise and perfection and the credibility and the credentials and the diplomas and whatever else. So yes, if we want to succeed in everything, it takes hard work, it takes austerity, it takes sacrifice. That's the substance of a person who's going to be successful. You cannot be lazy. You have to have determination. You have to be willing to make serious sacrifices in your life. That is the substance of the character of anyone who wants to really progress in their particular field. Yes? So we have previously Ravana, Kumbhakarna, Hiranyakashipu, Kamsa, Jarasandha. They were very, very powerful. They had the power to conquer the whole human race. But it didn't come easy. They spent years and years and years of practically torturing themselves to get these powers. Fasting. Hiranyakashipu, he stood on the tips of his toes with his arms raised for years and years and years with his body focused in meditation. He developed such a mystic power that burning, unbearable flames were shooting up from his head. Hare Krishna. Now, you may have never seen anyone who can make flames come out of their head. But you've never met anyone who did the austerities that Hiranyakashipu did. He was a powerful person. And Kamsa, what austerities he performed. He's a powerful person. And they gained, but their only ambition was power and influence. Because power and influence provide so many opportunities to fulfill any other desire. Yes? Our lust, our greed, we have full spectrum of ways to express our anger, our envy. We can exercise it and
not only exercise and execute our anger, but in such a way that whatever way we want to hurt others, we will have the facilities to do so. Hare Krishna. So these asuric personalities, they are especially hungry for power, especially hungry to control facilities and to control other people's lives. Krishna is Sarveshwareshwara. He is the controller of all controllers. The nature of the soul is to be controlled by Krishna, to be controlled by Krishna's love. But in order to reach that state of being controlled by Krishna's love, we have to control our own ambitions to control. Does that make sense? That's the root problem of material existence. If you study all the problems, all the anxieties, all the sufferings of the entire universal creation, it comes down to this. We have this desire to be controllers, but we're not. That's a problem, isn't it? We have the ambition to control, but essentially we cannot. We're always under control. We're either controlled by Krishna's internal energy, by being controlled by the love of God, and being an instrument of that love of God, or we're being controlled by the external energy of the Lord. Well, we're controlled by the three modes of material nature. We have seen that very nice illustration where Mayadevi, through the three modes of material nature, is keeping the living being like a puppet on strings. And the nature of puppet is whichever string the puppeteer pulls, the puppet will move in that way. It's controlled. Lust, envy, anger, pride, greed, illusion. These are the qualities of the illusory energy. And when one pulls on us through our mind, just pulls our mind in that direction, the mind pulls the senses, and we're like puppets. So although people want to present themselves as very independent, self-thinking, self-made men or women in this world, actually puppets. Either puppets of higher powers or puppets of lower powers. When Prabhupada was on Jaladuta, what was his prayer? Let me be your puppet, Krishna. The whole world is the puppet of their own lower nature. Let me be your puppet. Let me dance as you want me to dance. So everyone is controlled. We can be controlled as but within that control we have our independence. We have our free will. It's not that when we're controlled by Krishna we become like robots. We have unlimited potential of free choices. But they're simply with the proper motivation, with the proper purpose of reciprocating with Krishna's love. And materialistic people in the same way. They have unlimited freedom to make choices. But what is their motivation? It's all in the strings of the three modes of material nature, being controlled. So, this is a problem. We want to control. People don't like to grow old, and they don't like to die. Why? Why we don't like those things? They're inevitable. They're absolutely natural. It's like in the health food stores today, we see all natural products, organic, all natural. Yes, people like natural things, because natural things have the feeling that they're going to be good for my health. But factually, growing old, getting diseased, and dying is perfectly natural. Is it? It's all natural. Is it not? Time is there, ticking away. And with every tick, 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 it's consuming our life. So we grow old. And as we go old, this body just starts to fall apart, just like a withering flower. It's very natural. Why is it so difficult? Because it's beyond our control. We want to control, but we cannot control, whoever we may be. Circumstances come upon us that are simply beyond our control. And one who is surrendered to God, whatever that circumstance is, just, Krishna, I'm yours. And whatever the situation, can actually find realization and happiness. But for one who wants to be controller, very, very frustrating, is it not? Parents want to control their children. I remember in the 60s, I lived in Chicago. Parents, they want to control their children. They want their children to be like them, or better, according to their estimation. And then all children became hippies. Very frustrating. Such a very, very frustrating race of parents it was. Because they were doing the opposite. They were spending so much time working to buy, you know, nice hairsprays and grooming creams and all of that to look nice. And their children were just growing hair and didn't even, it was practically sinful to use a brush or a comb. Just natural. If Krishna, if God wanted our hair to be brushed, it would come out brushed. This is what some people were saying. Even at rainbow gatherings, they still say like this. People were taking off clothes. If God wanted us to wear clothes, He would have made us with clothes on. It's natural. So parents, they're working so hard to get fur coats and all of these things, and their children are just opposite. Very difficult. And the type of music, unbearable to the parents. They were listening to nice, sweet music according to their estimation, and their children are blaring it loud. What are you racking my brains? This is impossible. How are you doing it? But now those same children, they say the same things about their children. Yes? And patriotic to the nation, and their children were demonstrating against the government. Publicly. Now what could the parents do about it? Nothing except suffer. Adivo. Yes, Trinakarta Prabhu, you remember? So like that. This is what hippies were about. Breaking the hearts of their parents. And they enjoyed breaking the hearts of their parents because they believed that my parents believe is the times are changing. Get out of the new road if you don't lend your hand. Get out. Like that. parents, they have children with a whole conception. They have their whole idea of how my child will take over the family business and will go through college and all of these things. And all of a sudden, they're just wild. And they're going somewhere. My own parents say, I'll finish college, I'll take over the family business. And then they get a letter from me from Iran. That I'm hitchhiking to India to search for God, and I've decided to renounce the world. Do you think they were happy about that? You're laughing, but they were not laughing like this. Well, this is the problem. We want to control, but ultimately we have no control. And that's a very, very frustrating situation. So very asura people, they want power. Because the more power you have, the more you can control others. Yes? So let us take the example of Hiranyakashipu. He had so much power. And he worked for that power. It didn't come easy. He made such incredible penances, and he suffered terribly to get that power. Yes? And he had such power that he was controlling the demigods in the universe to a large extent. But it is described, he couldn't find a moment of happiness, real happiness, because he couldn't control his own mind and senses. He could control others, he could control natural situations, but he could not control himself. Therefore, he suffered. The meaning of Goswami is one who controls the mind and senses to keep them engaged in the positive activities of devotional service. In other words, a devotee tries to control himself in such a way, or herself in such a way, that that devotee can be completely controlled by Krishna. We control all of the propensities that are trying to take us away from the control of Krishna. Yes? And the materialistic conception of consciousness is very much the opposite. We're trying to be controllers. But it's a problem. Because fundamentally, essentially, eternally, you're not a controller. It's artificial. Therefore, it cannot bring any security. It cannot bring any real peace. So yes, Kamsa, Jarasandha, they were so powerful. They had so much ambition to control. And we see leaders, even in contemporary world, who have that hunger for power. That what they believe is right, everyone should accept it. Yes. Last year I was in Russia. According to Russian historians, Stalin, people outside of his own regime didn't really know what he was doing. But they believe that he murdered approximately 20 million of his own people. People of his own country murdered them. Exterminated them. 20 million. And historians say that is a modest estimate. The end justifies the means. This was his... He had such immense determination to have such power. And what did he do with that power?
And ultimately, you know, in this apparent life of his, he was never defeated. He was never overthrown. He was in full power of his government. And he died a so-called natural death. Yes? Arrivo. Of course, the mills of time grind slow but exceedingly fine. So any little bit of pain that he caused anyone, directly or indirectly, he is going to have to suffer that. Where is he today? Don't know. But we know that whatever pain he caused, all those 20 million people and all their relatives and all their friends, it's all going to have to be accepted directly and personally by him in due course of time. That is the law of karma. Cannot get away with anything but such power. And there was Hitler. One man. Just his greed, his envy, his hatred. He created a whole ideology on it and convinced an entire nation of it. And built up the most powerful army in the planet with it. And murdered millions and millions and millions. Not only soldiers, but innocent people. And enjoyed doing it. This is tamaguna, the mode of ignorance, where you actually find enjoyment inflicting suffering on others. It is the product of a very deeply frustrated consciousness where you find pleasure in torturing, killing others, because it's really a very ultimate experience in their own minds that I have the power and the control over other people's life and death. Yes? I have the power to exterminate your existence. Hare Krishna. People love that power. Some people. And they go through so many ordeals to achieve it. So yes, historically, there has been throughout time such demoniac heads of state who achieved that power due to their own intense hunger and thirst to control. And the unhappiness of others is their happiness. So Krishna comes to this world to remove the disease of this exploitative condition. And throughout the various incarnations that we read about in the Vedic histories, the Lord has come for this purpose. Krishna eliminated Jarasandha and Kamsa and Shishupal, and so many others. Denugasura, Putana, Trinavarta, Bhomasura, they all had that same mentality. And they were exploiting and torturing innocent. Paritra naya sadhunam vinashaya cha duskritam dharma samstapanaradaya sambhavami yuge yuge. Comes to remove this demoniac mentality, to protect the pious, and to reestablish the principles of true religion. So Krishna did like this. He fulfilled, as Prabhupada explains in the last sentence, this was the mission of Lord Sri Krishna, and he fulfilled it. When Krishna met the gopis in Kurukshetra, he had such a beautiful dialogue with them. This is revealed in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. Where gopis are praying, Krishna, please come back to Vrindavan. Why you have broken our hearts by leaving us? First you stole our hearts and then you took it with you and left. Last night, Niranjan Swami Maharaj was explaining that when a devotee serves Krishna with love and wants nothing in return, Krishna gives his own heart. That is the most beautiful aspect of God. We may worship God and bow down to Him for being all-powerful. And that's wonderful. But the most beautiful, most esoteric aspect of God is, although He's all-powerful, He's overpowered by the simple love of His devotee. When Ram was in Kishkindha forest searching for Sita, at Pampa Sarovar, he met Shabari. Shabari was a very, very old lady who was from an outcast family background. Yes? She had... There was nothing... distinguished about her from a social point of view. She was an old outcast woman who was just living in a cave in the forest, just waiting for Ram. For years and years and years, she was just waiting for Ram. She practically wasn't eating, she wasn't sleeping, she was just waiting for Ram, doing her meditations and everything. And here is Lord Sri Ramchandra, the supreme absolute truth, who all the devatas are worshipping, who all the saints and rishis are worshipping, who's controlling all material and spiritual worlds. And here's little Shabari. She's just a tiny little lady, very thin, old. Nobody knows who she is. She's all alone in the jungles. She's an outcast by birth. And she's welcoming Ram. And she's feeding Ram fruits. That's all she had. But there wasn't nice fruits there. There was just a particular type of fruit. And that fruit, they all look the same. But sometimes they're bitter and sometimes they're sweet. And you can't tell by looking at them. It's like if you go to a grocery store, sometimes you squeeze the fruits to see if they'll be sweet or unripe. But this particular fruit, you can't squeeze. They all look and feel the same. Yes, but you don't know. So she was taking a bite out of a fruit and seeing whether it's sweet. If it was bitter, she'd throw it away. If it was sweet, she'd take it out of her mouth and give it to Ram to eat. Yes? Is that the way you offer to Kishore Kishore? Cannot do that. It's offensive. According to the orthodox mood of preparing food for the deities, you're not supposed to even smell it. You're not supposed to even be thinking in your mind of tasting it. Yes? You're supposed to just be in a service attitude preparing it for Krishna. You're not supposed to be thinking, after it's done and it's prasad, then I will eat it. Not even that. The highest platform of cooking for the deities is no expectation of anything. It's simply for Krishna. I remember one place I lived, the cooks were not allowed to eat anything that they made. Devotee prasad, but the deity prasad, they weren't allowed to take anything. That way they couldn't even, in the farthest reach of their imaginations, expect that they were going to get it.
So it's just for Krishna. Well, not everyone does like that. Sometimes those cooks would secretly steal the prasad. But that's the consciousness. And here's Shabari. She's just putting it right in her mouth. Her saliva's on it and everything. And she's, "Sri Ram, please." And he's eating it. And he's in ecstasy. He sends it right back home, back to Godhead, because he liked it so much. So this is how the Lord, even apparently most insignificant, unknown old lady in the forest, the supreme controller of all controllers, is controlled by her love. That is the sweetness and the beauty of the Supreme Lord. When we read in the Quran or the Old Testament about the various powers of God, when we read in the Puranas about the creative potencies and the destructive potencies of the Almighty, that gives us an understanding of how we're very much under the control of that great spirit of the Lord. But the sweetness, of the real sweetness of spirituality is to understand the inner heart. That even if the most apparently socially insignificant person just serves Krishna with love, and even if nobody else even knows they exist, Krishna gives his heart to them. If you want anything in return from God, he will give you that, but not his heart. Only if we want absolutely nothing except to serve him, then he gives his own heart. And he becomes, Lord Chaitanya said about Vasudev Dutt, "I am his property. I am simply Vasudev Dutt's man. I am his property." He said it 3 times. He said, for emphasis, 3 times I am speaking, for everyone knows forever that I am simply Vasudev Dutt's property. Wherever he wants to sell me, I am sold. Wherever he wants to give me, I will go. That is love. And why? Why he was like this toward Vasudev Dutt? Because Vasudev Dutt only wanted one benediction from the Lord. He didn't want wealth, he didn't want long life, he didn't want health, he didn't want success, he didn't want people to like him. He only wanted one thing: to serve the mission of the Lord. Why does the Lord come to this world? He comes to this world to relieve the suffering of people who are forgetful of him. That is the mission of the Lord when he descends. That's his only mission. To give bliss to the hearts of those who are suffering in this world and give pleasure to his devotees by doing so. So Vasudev Dutt said, "My Lord, I only have one desire. Please grant me this benediction. Let all the karma, let all the sinful reactions of all living beings on the entire universe fall on my head. I cannot bear to see them suffer. Let me suffer for everyone, perpetually, and let them all return to the spiritual world." He's honest. Therefore, Lord Chaitanya said, "I am your property. My heart is your property." That is selfless love. So Krishna descends into this world especially to relieve the burden of people who are being exploited in this way. And it is explained herein that Krishna fulfilled his wish. But after he fulfilled his wish, he left. He departed
from his earthly manifestation within this world and returned to his own abode. And that made things worse.
Yes.
The gopis at Kurukshetra, they were praying to Krishna that he left us. We offered our whole life and soul to you. You played your flute, you smiled upon us, you glanced upon us, and through this process, you stole our hearts completely. And then you left. And now look at us. We're just bodies without lives, because the life is within the heart. You just took it all away. Please return. And Krishna said, I left Vrindavan because I had to perform my mission of dealing with these asuras like Kamsa and Salva and Dantavakra. And these people, they had huge military phalanxes also. We're not alone. He said, there's only two or four more demons that I have to take care of, then I'll come back to Vrindavan. But then Krishna revealed his own heart, that when you cry for me, when you cry in separation from me, I'm crying in separation from you. Although my body is killing all these demons, my heart is in Vrindavan with you. I've never left Vrindavan. So this is a wonderful loving exchange, which is very extraordinary and difficult for an ordinary mind to understand. That Krishna left Vrindavan and took the hearts of gopis, but he left his heart with them. Hare Krishna. Does that make sense? For someone like Govinda, it makes sense. This is what Vipralamba Bhava is about. The feelings of love and separation. Where we give our heart to Krishna and Krishna gives his heart to us. It's a beautiful experience. So here, the cow and the bull, Dharma and Bhumi, they're expressing their own feelings of separation in this sense. That Krishna fulfilled his mission, but then he left. Bhumi would rather have all the asuras trampling on her and have Krishna there doing his leelas than for him to just make everything all right and leave. This was Kunti's prayer also. The Pandavas, they were going through so many terrible persecutions, year after year after year, so much trouble. They were being blasphemed. Their prestige was just being trampled on in the eyes of society. They lost their wealth. They lost their services. They lost everything. And as we were saying, the nature of a saintly person is you suffer to see those you love suffering. So Kunti is their mother. So whatever difficulties the Pandavas endured, Kunti suffered far more. Burden of love. And ultimately, Krishna always protects his devotees. So there was the Kurukshetra Lila, and ultimately, the Pandavas were victorious. No more persecution, no more exile into the jungles. Their rightful claim was given back to them. Yudhisthira was the monarch who had the emperorship over the entire world. And their palaces and Hastinapur and all of the
wonderful facilities that they deserved were theirs. There was no more any obstacles for them. And Kunti's crying. She's crying more now than when all the problems were there. Vipadashantantashashvatatratatrajagatguru. She's praying in this way. Krishna, let all these calamities, persecutions, and tortures come again. Because in those situations, you were always here to protect us. But now everything is all right, so you're leaving. You're going back to your own city. This is the worst predicament. Hare Krishna. This is the mood that Bhumi and Dharma are speaking today. Ultimately, whatever it takes, they only want Krishna. They only want the satisfaction of Krishna. Now Krishna has left us. Krishna Surya Samaya Haya Andhakar. Krishna is like the sun and Maya is like darkness. In the presence of the sun, there can be no darkness. So now Krishna has left, and see the condition. Kali had no place in the world as long as Krishna was present. But as soon as Krishna left this world, Kali Yuga begins. Hare Krishna. And this is what they are grieving about. But Krishna comes in this age of Kali. That beautiful song of Bhakti Vinod Thakur. If you want to be free from the menace-like dog of Kali, just take shelter of the son of Sashi Devi. He will bring about fearlessness, hope, and great prospect in every aspect of life. So in the darkness of this age of Kali, where there is so much greed, there is so much desire for power and control in people's minds, the Lord incarnates as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And incarnates in his own holy name to give light, to give hope, to purify our hearts. And Kali Yuga is considered to be the best age for self-realization because there are so many oppressive situations. There is all encouragement through this environment to really understand that we must take shelter of the Lord, who has descended as his own holy name. Kali Kale Namarupe Krishna Avatar. Krishna is none different than his name to give us shelter and hope in this age of Kali. Is there any questions? Yes. Ultimately, in the form of time, Krishna does everything. But in this Kali Yuga, or in this age, Krishna descends within his name, which can rescue individually or collectively those who take shelter of the name from all of these influences. Kali Yuga is a time when such type of oppression is allowed to go on. We can see it around us. Kali Yuga, it's all prophesied before Kali Yuga began, that there will be blood, that there are even today situations like this. What to speak of the future, where people will be so oppressed just by taxation. Yes? And they don't even believe what they're giving their money for. And if you don't pay your taxes, you go to prison. You're punished. Your rights are taken away from you. And who's making the decisions of what the taxes will be, and who's making the decisions of what they're being used for? Sometimes it is people who simply want to exploit us for their own aggrandizement and power. Yes, this is one of the symptoms of the age of Kali. It's the season, the time of the season. It's like in Chicago, you have your famous winters, the windy city, where the wind comes off the icy Lake Michigan, and I don't know what it's like today because there's some global warming going on, but years ago, ripping cold winds, yes? Still? So what do? You understand. The season is summer. Everything is very nice. Summer in Chicago is something like Satya Yuga. Winter is like Kali Yuga. What can you do? You have to prepare yourself. Yes, you put a nice roof on your house. You get some nice heating somehow or other. Get warm clothes, and you're protected. So in this wintry season of Kali that we are now in, for the next 327,000 years, 427,000 years, how do we stay warm? Huh? Very good. Yes. The name of the Lord will protect us from the influences of the age of Kali. Although they're all around us. It's not that when you turn on the heat in your house, the sun comes out. The wind's still blowing. It's snow still coming down. But you can become transcendental. So in the same way, by taking shelter of God's name, we can find the inner peace and inner love of God's presence within our heart and be transcendental to the situation. And we want to bring more and more and more people to have that experience also. Hare Krishna. But in the end, Kalki comes. But it's, we're not so concerned with that. We are concerned with his holy name, all of his opulences, all of his beauty, all of his sweetness, all of his love is manifesting through his name if we just accept it. Yes? happiness.
Many of the great founders of the religions of the West are Shaktyavesh avatars. Prabhupada explained Jesus Christ was a Shaktyavesh avatar, and others also were establishing such religious spiritual principles according to time, place, and circumstance. But even when Ram and Krishna appeared in their original forms, still, they gave everyone independence. The Lord never forces us to accept Him or surrender to Him. Krishna came before Duryodhana, showed him his universal form, gave him nice teachings, but Duryodhana would not accept. He wanted to follow the dictations of his own envy instead. Prahlad Maharaj preached so nicely to Hiranyakashipu. It was Krishna speaking through Prahlad, but he rejected. Ravana, so many nice lessons he was given, but he rejected. So in the same way, even today, the Lord has appeared within the name. The Lord has appeared in the temple. The Lord is within our hearts. But how many are willing to accept? That is always our free choice. Hare Krishna. This is a very nice clock. Have you seen clock? Krishna says, time I am. So this is very much like that. Krishna is playing his flute. He's playing his timeless flute to deliver us from the influence of himself in the form of time. And while we're on the subject of time, we should end here. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Kishore Kishore Dev ki jai.